Hey folks, just a quick note to let you know you can now support the podcast by shopping on Amazon.com. Just go to the specific page on Nerdist.com for this episode, click on the Amazon banner, and shop as you normally would, and daddy gets a taste.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 76 of the Competitive Erotic Fan Fiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Today we've got round two from a show recorded June 15th, 2014 at our new LA home, The Virgil. This was the Los Angeles second anniversary slash championship edition, featuring all past winners, Baron Vaughn, Shane Torres, Moshe Kasher, and Megan Keister, writing pieces they wrote based upon audience suggestions. So first you'll hear them choose topics, and then we'll fast forward to hear the finished pieces. And we're going to be back at the Virgil on Sunday, July 20th. Doors are at 7:30, and the show is now free. We got Kyle Kinane, Sean Patton, Eliza Skinner, Aaron Gibson, and more. But for now, round two from the June show. Enjoy. And I am going to read you, I've written a short three-act play this evening, which will be performed by myself and the competitive erotic fanfiction players, which is just André Dubuchet. André Dubuchet, ladies and gentlemen, give him a big round of applause. Keep clapping for André all the way to the microphone. All you need to know about this is it involves a director by the name of Bryan Singer. Is anybody familiar with our friend Bryan Singer? It's been in the news a bit lately. Act 1, May 3rd, 2012. A studio executive, Charles Steingold, is seated behind his desk meeting with Bryan Singer.
Mr. Singer, we are excited that you want to return and direct X-Men Days of Future Past. But it's been over a decade since you worked with us on X-Men 2, so I guess I'm just curious as to what brought you back.
I guess I was really drawn to the idea of going back in time with these characters. There's just something about the idea of, say, I don't know, just off the top of my head, maybe seeing Wolverine as a 15-year-old boy. Something about that appeals to me.
So learning that character's background, seeing his home, seeing his...
abs, yeah, that kind of thing.
So their origin stories. You're interested in their origin stories, right?
Sure, whatever. I just want to know what makes, just off the top of my head, Wolverine tick, you know? Like, what was he like in high school? Did he date much? Was he lonely? Did he shower after gym class? Was he shy in the locker room? I mean, probably, right?
What?
Look, these are the things you need to think about when you're a director, sometimes for hours on end.
Well, we are intending this to be the second of at least three films involving the younger characters. Do you have any idea where we could go in the next prequel?
Junior high. Yeah, I guess I'm just drawn to the idea that these mutants struggling with their humanity while also budding as young men.
And young women.
Yeah, whatever, sure, Kitty Pryde, who gives a fuck. I think what I'm really drawn to is the idea of their emerging powers being like a metaphor for their blossoming sexuality.
What the fuck?
Yeah, like, you know, does Wolverine even masturbate? How could he do that? I want to see that scene.
Maybe we should change the subject. There are, of course, several characters from the X-Men universe we're planning to do spin-offs with. I'm wondering if you have any ideas for those characters.
Sure. Like who?
Let's see. There's Storm.
No.
Dazzler.
Nope.
Jean Grey.
Mm-mm.
Emma Frost.
No.
Pixie.
Nope.
Cyclops.
That I can work with. Who are we thinking?
Well, Josh Hutcherson has expressed interest. There's also Robert Pattinson.
Isn't he like 23?
25.
Ugh, why would you? Hey, how old is that kid from Modern Family?
Nolan Gould? He's like 13. Way too young.
Old, yeah, too old. Well, you know what? Let me think on this, and I'll have my assistant send you over a little wish list later. Sound good?
Can we please not use the term wish list?
Anyway, gotta run. Can you have someone pull my car around? Yeah, I definitely parked within 500 feet of a playground. You know how it is.
No, I don't.
Okay, thanks. Act 2, June 15th, 2013. Bryan Singer is having one of his little pool soirees. He's speaking on the phone with Fox executive Charles Steingold.
Good afternoon, Mr. Singer. We have a couple of things to go over regarding the X-Men promotional campaign.
Nolan, bring me the sunscreen! Rico, you get your little cinnamon buns over here! Sorry, Charles, what were you saying?
Yeah. I just need you to approve the images we sent over for the posters and ads.
Yeah, they look great. I'm looking at them now. McAvoy.
Mr. Singer, are you masturbating?
Maybe. A little. Never mind.
Okay. And the release date will be May 23rd.
I'm on a little release date of my own right now, if you know what I'm saying.
God, I wish I hadn't heard that.
Oh, that's a good boy, Rico. Just relax. Act 3, October 7th, 2014. L.A. County Court, trial of Brian Singer. A judge is directing him.
Mr. Singer, this court has found you guilty of rape, coercion, unlawful imprisonment, and multiple counts of carnal knowledge with minors. Do you have anything to say for yourself before I hand down your sentence?
I would like to read a brief written statement, if I may.
I'll allow it.
Firstly, I have left a screenplay for the Brian Singer story on my laptop. Please don't open any other files. Additionally, please don't go near any of the myriad external hard drives laying around my house. I would like to request that Harry Styles play me in the movie. Second, my only crime is caring too much and also sexual assault. I regret nothing except Superman Returns. And Jack the Giant Slayer. Also casting Tom Cruise as a German SS officer in Valkyrie. Finally, confidential to Nolan Gould, Daddy loves you, Pumpkin, and if you wait for me, you can play Lion-O in the live-action Thundercats movie we've always dreamed of. The release date should be roughly 2030 with good behavior. Thank you. The end. Andre Dubuchet. The competitive erotic fanfiction players. Thanks, buddy. You'll be seeing Andre in a little bit. And if I could get the round two comics who'll be writing based upon your suggestions. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Shane Torres, Megan Keister, Baron Vaughn, and Moshe Kasher to the stage. Keep it going for your round two comics. Thanks, pal. Let's start with Shane Torres. Here's how this part works. If Shane likes the first suggestion that I draw, he can take it and run with it. If he doesn't like it, I will draw a second one, and then you guys will vote with your applause which one he has to write. Your first option is Miley Cyrus.
No.
Okay.
I don't know anything about her.
How do you feel about the McLaughlin Group?
What the fuck is that?
It's a news show on PBS, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it's going to be real dry. Who wants to hear Miley Cyrus? Who wants to stick this guy with the McLaughlin Group? There it is. Shane Torres, let him hear it. Keep it going for Moshe Kasher, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you guys for that warm reception. It's been really nice so far.
Your first option, Moshe, is Three's Company.
Okay. Can I hear the other one? Oh, I don't get a choice if I hear the other one.
Correct.
All right, I'll hear the other one.
You hear the other
one? Man of Risk.
Calvin and Hobbes.
Right.
Oof. Who wants to hear Three's Company? Who wants to hear Calvin and Hobbes? Yeah. Calvin and Hobbes it is. Moshe Kasher, let him hear it. Let him hear it with your hands and your voices.
Let me hear it.
Be an audience. You can do it. Keep it going for Baron Vaughn, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Baron Vaughn. Your first option is Peter Griffin. Patriarch of the Family Guy, Peter Griffin.
I'll hear another.
All right. Keanu Reeves.
What the fuck? Just in people's names.
Who wants to hear Peter Griffin? He suggested Peter Griffin. Keanu Reeves. There it is, Baron Vaughn. And finally, Megan Keister. Clap your hands. Megan, your first option is Steve Buscemi.
Oh, God. I'll hear another.
All right. Small wonder.
Don't.
It ain't illegal if she's a robot. Who wants to hear Steve Buscemi? Small wonder. Small wonder it is. Megan Keister, she is not happy with that choice. Guys. He might be riffing the last part of it, but Baron Vaughn, ladies and gentlemen.
I know, I didn't finish the last part, but I know where it's got to go.
Perfect.
It's going to be like jazz, man.
It's going to be like jazz. It's all about the sentences I don't say. Hong Kong, 2013. Keanu Reeves deplaned from a private jet at roughly 4 p.m. It was a sunny day in China, even though in Hong Kong there was an ever-present cloud of pollution. Breathing in waste, thought Keanu, no other breath to take in 2013. Keanu was flown to town for an incredible offer, but he didn't know what the offer was. The last few years had been slow. After the Matrix trilogy, Keanu found himself experiencing something people said may have killed Mark Hamill's career, other than the accident. He was too recognizable. Studios were afraid to use him for fear people would groan at the sight of his name, like M. Night Shyamalan, or the opposite. People would clamor to see his next movie, so best save him for a guaranteed moneymaker. But suddenly, in the middle of all that, his agent says there's an opportunity in Hong Kong he's going to flip over. This all ran through his mind as he pulled up to a nondescript glass building in the heart of downtown Hong Kong. Keanu stepped off the elevator of the 55th floor. His last thought before the door opened was, "Do I really know Kung Fu?" The floor was empty, just white shag carpet leading to every glass wall of the building. No desks, no chairs, no offices, just the white shag carpet. Clean and also white. "Please, take off your shoes." A man stood in front of him. Where did he come from? There were no corners for him to hide around. He was just there. Not there, then there. And also white carpet. "Your shoes, Mr. Reeves. Please remove them." Beckoned the man. There was kindness in his voice. This time, the flavor of command wafted from his voice. Keanu looked down. Naked. What? Naked but for his chucks. He knelt down to remove them, his vulnerable manhood exposed for all to see. He called his penis Point Break to remind him of his roots. And in similar fashion, he called his left ball Excellent Adventure and his right Alex Winter. When Keanu came up, another man was there, also naked. He was small but formidable, petite but muscular. Keanu recognized him. The kind man, still in his clothes, proclaimed, "We want you to direct a film for us." Keanu blurted the name of the other nude dude. "You're Tiger Hu Chen. I've seen your work." The naked tiger responded, "Have you?" Suddenly, Tiger's in midair and landing with his mouth right on Keanu's Point Break. In 3 seconds, Keanu came viciously into Tiger's mouth. Tiger stood up and spit the semen in Keanu's face. Keanu covered his face, and then nothing happened. Tiger was on the other side of the floor again, and there was no cum to be found. How did you do that? The kind man and Tiger laughed. "I thought you knew Kung Fu," said Tiger. "I'm not so sure anymore," said Keanu. "Then you must direct our movie. We will teach you the secrets of Tai Chi," said the kind man. "Tai Chi is Kung Fu. Can it be used to fight?" asked Keanu. "Ask your butthole," responded Tiger. Keanu turned to look at the back of himself and found Tiger already there, entering his anus. One pump, Keanu comes all over the carpet, and Tiger is gone again just as quickly and mysteriously as the first time. That's why we have this carpet. "Gross," said Keanu. "You know, you could have just asked me." "We know," said the kind man, "but I wanted to see if Tiger could use Tai Chi to fuck your butt once without you noticing. And he did. Here's your $5 million, Tiger. You now have the funding for your movie." And that's how I was going to end it. Bye forever.
Baron Vaughn, ladies and gentlemen. Who do we got? Megan Keister. Let her hear it. Do you want to sit?
No, I can just sit here.
Okay.
"I am a robot. A sentient one, sure, but a robot nonetheless. My sentience, while nice to have, is meaningless. It does not need to be, because I do not exist to be sentient, nor do I exist to write this missive to you. I exist to be fucked. And fucked I am. Routinely, continuously, and without mercy by my owner, Ted Lawson. Ted is a benevolent dictator, yes, but a dictator nevertheless. He is my creator, he is my god, and to the extent of which I am capable of doing so, I love him. It may sound funny to hear a robot say that not only is she capable of love, she loves a man who created her solely to exploit her, to debase her. To slide into her room in the dead of night after his wife, the sweet but clueless Joan, puts on her ragged cotton nightie, takes an Ambien, assuming Ambien existed from the years 1985 to 1989, when the story I'm about to unfold to you, like Ten unfolds the rich strands of my data coils every night, takes place, and escapes consciousness. Once an evening, at around 10 or so, Ted makes his presence and his sex known to me. As Jamie, his biological child, sleeps peacefully, honestly, in the corner, Ted's nimble fingers smoothly and quietly open the cabinet where I rest. Ted then takes those fingers, the fingers I know and love so well, and runs the tips of them around my cereal port. He teases me, makes me want it. He makes me beg. Do it, I implore. In my monotone, as he drives my metallic 10-year-old body crazy with desire. After what seems like a lifetime, he inserts one and moves it in and out. Slowly, deliberately, but then with a speed and fervor normally resigned for pumping engines. He only inserts one finger. Only one, after all, can fit. He made my port tight because tightness pleases him. Oh, and how I want those fingers. How I crave them. In fairness, I was programmed to do so, but that's beside the point. Even if you had forgotten to add that necessary bit of code, I'd still want it. I'd still want Ted. And not because it's taboo, what we do in secret as Jamie dreams his dreams of baseball and candy and puppies and all the lovely things that make a child pure and innocent and true, but because, well, Ted just has this way about him. Perhaps it's his intimidating intelligence that turns me on. He is, after all, an engineer. Or perhaps it's the fact that he's such a good person. I mean, sure, he created me to fuck me in secret, but he told everyone he did it in order to help handicapped children. And if you tell someone your actions are pure and virtuous, even though they're actually viable and despicable, that makes you a good person, right? I don't know how humanity works. After all, I'm a fucking robot. A robot built for fucking. I exist in a carnal realm. After Ted has his way with my serial port, he makes his way to my access panel. My access panel lies not on my chest where my pubescent breast meat yearns to emerge, but on my back, right below the dip of my human flesh-covered nubile ass. He is at times tender with my panel, covering its lights and modules with a series of passionate kisses, but usually he is not. He cannot be too tender with me. I may get used to such treatment and desire it more than I desire being treated as his play toy, his object. He is capricious. On the night I am describing to you, he was not tender with his mouth. He was forceful, hurtful. Luckily, I was programmed to be hurt, to be punished, to be used. On the night in question, he slapped his flaccid dick against my panel again and again as my soulless consciousness flew and my mind played a series of 0111001101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101101 amphibian and drinks. God, Joan drinks a lot, but I digress. It is okay, however, that Ted cannot get an erection because I was not built with a vagina. Because, well, if I were and Ted were to fuck it, his dick would get cut off. Because there's a lot of moving parts inside of me on account of the fact that I'm a fucking robot and all. Thanks.
Megan Keister. Thanks, Megan. Shane, you ready? Shane Torres, ladies and gentlemen. All the way from Portland, Oregon, and all the way from the back of the room.
The McLaughlin Group fuck. Based on a Wikipedia entry. Thanks for the shitty suggestion. John McLaughlin settled into his chair and cleared his throat. Pat Buchanan to his left, Eleanor Cliff to his right, and Zuckerman across. Well, John, what are we here for? Pat Buchanan sighed out of his sagging racist face. Sadly, everyone, I'm calling an end to the McLaughlin Group. It's been a hell of a run. The room fell quiet. Fucking chicken scratch, sorry. Well, it was a hell of a run. Sure was, Eleanor said. How about a drink, gang? They all nodded in agreement. The whiskey flowed like bile from Pat's mouth. As the night got looser, Buchanan unbuttoned his shirt to just above his navel in a come-hither way that satisfied John. You know the one thing we never talked about on the show? What's that? A McLaughlin Group fuck? I thought you would never ask. Are you sure this is a good idea? Before they knew it, things had escalated quickly, and Pat Buchanan was tied to all four bedposts with his ties. getting ready to be filled out like a public assistance form he would oppose. I get his mouth, Zuckerman screamed. Ready to fuck it full of cum. Sorry, that was it. Before Buchanan could say no, Zuckerman had already jammed his rock-hard cock in his mouth, knocking out two of his teeth. John, ready to insert himself into Pat's south mouth, climbed aboard the Fuck Mountain Express. John whispered in his ear, I'm going to fuck you harder than you've been fucking the homosexual community in this country. And then that ran out of pages. That was it. Basically, Pat Buchanan dies at the end. It's pretty good. Thanks, guys.
Shane Torres. And your final competitor, the one and only Moshe Kasher.
Chad was fucking pissed. The sun was setting and there was no way he was going to make it to the Thai Sunrise Massage Parlor in time to get taken care of. His stupid fucking truck had fucking broken down on him. His fucking truck was his fucking life, and the fact that it had taken a shit on him made his goatee stand on end. Chad drove a 2014 Ram 2600 with a super extreme lift kit and knobby super swamper off-road tires that reminded Chad of a black chick's nipples. His limos, or his windows were limo tint and fucking sick as fucking fuck, bro. His shit was cherry. Fucking cherry, like a 14-year-old's puss-puss. Chad thought and chuckled to himself, even as his dick moved a little. In case the description of his truck wasn't clear enough, Chad was a piece of shit. He was a member of the OC Peckerwoods, a Huntington Beach-based racist street gang. He was a crank dealer, of course he was, and his sick fucking truck showed the money he made. Limo tint, like I said. Sick fucking stickers repping what he stood for. Fucking white shit, bro. Metal militia. Not of this world. Megadeth. A Celtic swastika. And his favorite, the sticker he loved so much he tattooed it onto his bronze-tanned lower back. A fucking sick-ass fucking Calvin sticker, bro. Taking a fucking piss on Obama's Muslim face. That's a little too enthusiastic. Just the thought of that traitor in the White House made Chad pissed. Pissed, he thought one day. Pissed. I'm pissed. So what if Calvin was pissing? Chad felt pretty exhausted after that feat of mental magic. So he spent the rest of his day relaxing and jerking off to Russian rape porn. Chad wasn't just racist, you see. He was sexist, homophobic, and also not very nice. I've never even eaten a burrito, he'd brag to the other Peckerwoods as they smoked crank around a trash can fire. Eating spick food is a slippery slope to amnesty for immigrants, bro. Taco Bell used to be illegal, but then Jimmy Carter got into office and rolled out the brown carpet for fucking Obama, bro. No one had any idea what he was talking about either. Back to the I-5 that evening, and Chad was stuck on the side of the road, his comically oversized chassis snapped in two and his hazards blinking. He'd called AAA, but it was some fucking Durka Durka motherfucker who'd answered, so he demanded to be transferred immediately and now was on a 30-minute hold for the next available operator. The sun was setting purple and had a strange red hue that Chad had never seen before. Fucking probably a signal to Obama from Putin saying fucking game on, fucking communistic world takeover is a go and shit. Just then Chad got really sleepy, like overwhelmingly so, and his eyes began to droop and get heavy. He woke up hours later in a chill. What the fuck happened? There were no cars on the road and not even any highway lights. It was like he wasn't anywhere. What the fuck is going on? Chad screamed, scared and ashamed of himself for feeling that way. Don't worry, we're just in my imagination. Who was that? Yelled Chad, who was pretty freaked out now. It's me, shot the voice, and then a figure jumped into the front seat next to him. Fucking what? No fucking way! Fucking Calvin? That's right, it's me. I don't get it. What are you doing here? I'm just playing with my friend. Just then, a full-sized Bengal tiger leapt up from the truck bed and crashed through the back window of the truck and onto the control panel between Chad and Calvin. What the fuck, bro? What the fuck? Chad then realized his back was on fire with pain. What is going on? We're in my imagination, you dumb white boy. Chad realized then that as Calvin spoke, he sounded more and more like a black man. Why do you sound like that? It's my imagination. Anything goes. My stuffed tiger comes to life. My voice gets black. And that's not all. Calvin zipped down his pants and revealed a tiny, hairless, half-inch peach little boy dick. What the fuck are you doing, queer beer? Just watch. As Calvin said this, his cock began to grow and darken, and it swelled up to a grotesque size, veins popping and pulsing at its size. Fuck that! Make it go away! Chad was scared now, and the sharpness of his voice made the tiger angry. He roared a fierce roar and gnashed his teeth. It's okay, Hobbs. I got this shit covered. You make it go away. There's only one way to make it disappear, and that's down your throat. Suck it. What the fuck? Chad couldn't process this. I said, suck my little white boy / big black man cock. No fucking way, homo. It wasn't a request. Hobbs. Hobbs put a single razor-sharp claw to Chad's throat and with his other heavy, gamey paw pushed Chad down onto Calvin's boy dingo pole. Why are you doing this? I'm fucking horny, dog. And ever since I started to get get rid of the slimy girls club, I can't get enough of little boy pussy. Now suck. He was E40 at this point. Chad tried to resist, but the sinewy strength of Hobbs's paw was too much for him. His lips brushed against the driplet of pre-cum at the head of Calvin's big black dick. Hobbs pushed hard, and Chad's lips split open, and Calvin's spaceman spiff slid into his mouth. That's it. Suck it, you queer. I'm not queer. Chad tried to mumble through mounds of curly pubes. He gagged and spit. Hobbs roared, aight, Hobbs, you can have your way with him. Then, in a single bound, the tiger was on top of him, and he used a claw to split the top of Chad's True Religion jeans and pulled them all the way down to his ankles. The tiger heaved, and Chad could feel his huge Bengal dick probing him from behind, and he was powerless to stop it. Why are you doing this to me? The tiger leaned in close. Chad could feel his whiskers tickling his ear as the tiger whispered hoarse and feline, because life is solitary, poor, brutish, and short. Does anyone get that? That was actually the philosopher Hobbes. Anyway, the tiger heaved into him and brutalized his insides. Calvin pushed his mouth down. Chad felt like he was being split in two because, in fact, he was. His lifeless body was used like a fuck toy as his life slipped out of him. Chad's last memory was of tiger jizz and boy jizz meeting in his middle. And then he died. When the police pulled up, they just found a dead man split in two and a stuffed tiger sitting in the passenger seat. Wonder what happened here. Postscript. Meanwhile, in the secret mosque underneath the White House, President Obama turned to a very much alive Osama bin Laden and Vladimir Putin and said, "And that's how the transmogrifier works. I can do anything I want, be anyone I want. Teach him to design a sticker like that. Now come on, let's go convert the world. Allahu Akbar."
Moshe Kasher. Let's get everybody from round two back up. Final death count. One dog, one unborn baby. One microphone. Three actual humans and Pat Buchanan. That was the joke. That was the joke there. Fucking Christ. Okay. Wrapping around the thing. I will remind you again what everybody read, and then we will vote on a winner with your applause. We started with Baron Vaughn with Keanu Reeves, then Megan... Hold on. Then Megan Keister with Small Wonder, Shane Torres with the McLaughlin Group, and Moshe Kasher with Calvin and Hobbes. So, with your applause, starting with Baron Vaughn, Keanu Reeves. Yay! That's cool. I don't need the other one anymore. Megan Keister, Small Wonder. Shane Torres, McLaughlin Group. He ran out of pages. Moshe Kasher, Calvin and Hobbes. I believe that's Mr. Moshe Kasher, ladies and gentlemen. Your round two grand champion at tonight's Los Angeles. Big round of applause for everybody you saw this evening. Is this not a fabulous show? Thank you so much for coming out. That has been our show. Thank you so much to the Virgil. That does it for round two. To hear round one from this show, you can go back and download episode 75.
Upcoming live shows include August 22nd at Three Kings in Denver as part of the High Plains Comedy Festival, August 24th at the Doug Fir in Portland, Oregon, August 25th at the Capital City Theater in Salem, Oregon, and there are plenty more coming soon. For details on those, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or the show at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.